So I guess all stories about monkey business start freshman year in college. It might have started a little bit before with my preoccupation with movies and stuff like that, but let's start to get transcendental. So for our purposes, we're at good old Stony Brook University. Now, Stony Brook was pretty much a gray campus, in part designed by the Army Corps of Engineers. Not so surprisingly, if you went to school there, it was commonly believed that the maze of buildings that were set up was a giant psych experiment, designed by the psychology department or some weird government collaborative by Brookhaven Labs. But I start to get ahead of myself. So I'm a double major in computer science and mathematics and a double minor in music and art. Kind of funny since the minors became a major part of my life and the majors became a minor part of the story. Now, I'm in CSE 103, stands for Computer Science Engineering, and we are in a class of over 1,000 students. Now, they didn't call it a readout class, but our lab had only 80 computers in which for us to create our programs. Now, back then, there wasn't a computer in every household, and even if you did have a computer, it wasn't running the type of programs that we were putting in at the time. So most of my time was spent sitting in the lab for hours and days, waiting for a terminal to free up. We would just sit there, me and my friends, my lab partners, Chris, and another guy named Rob, and we would sit there talking about life, the universe, and everything as everybody was putting their code into the computers and these green diode screens spitting garbage out at them. And in the background is the incessant roar of the Day's Wheel printer just documenting trial and error. At the time, everybody believed that computers were going to put paper manufacturers out of business. I watched this one lab decimate a small forest. So one Saturday, we're sitting there, and through the grate, we hear these squeaks. And we're getting closer and closer. And we're thinking about the squeaks, and then we're like, wait a second, what is that? It sounds like people are playing handball or racquetball or something. It's like pure torture for us. We're sitting there, waiting to put in our code, doing all this thing, Saturdays, and we get to suffer. This is when a TA is looking at us, he stops. What are you guys talking about? Racquetball? There's a racquetball in the computer science building. We share the same building with the bioscience labs. We're all looking at him like, what do you mean? He's like, what you hear, it's not racquetball. That's feeding time in the monkey lab. Imaginations flared, the sound transformed, and we knew what we needed to do, and that was to see the monkeys. That's right. Okay. Yes. Tika, what are you talking about? Don't worry about it. The labs are locked. You will never get there. Concentrate and put in your code. But it was too late. We knew what we needed to do. Unfortunately, the TA was right. The lab was behind at least two locked doors, even with some of our unlocking skills as hackers. And there were no windows that we could, like, get into the lab. We scoured the building up and down, right and left, everywhere. We couldn't find a way to get into the labs. Our adventures and searches found us lots of cool things in the building, even this, like, really excellent exit way out through the loading docks, where these huge, giant silver doors with these trays. Lots of fun for freshmen at 3 o'clock in the morning, hiked up on Doritos and Mountain Dew. And it had this great view of one of the monkey lab entrances. anyway, we couldn't find our way in, so after some time, we got a little bored, and we went back to doing more productive things and just putting in our code and waiting for computers to free up. And one day, Chris bursts into the lab and goes, "I got it! I know how we can get in!" How, Chris? And we'll go through the tunnels and come up from below. Me and Rob look at him incredulous. Tunnels? What are you talking about? You see, it's like this. When they were designing the state universities of New York, for in case of an emergency, all the campuses were designed with a network of tunnels so students could get from building to building, just in case. Now, I don't know what can happen, like a big giant emergency on Long Island, except for like a hurricane. I guess there could be a nuclear power reactor accident in Shoreham Wading River Power Authority. They put a power plant out there. I mean, putting a power plant on a nuclear power plant. No, they did. They put it on a popular. I guess another emergency could be something at Brookhaven Labs. They have a particle accelerator. Yeah. But they're anyway. I've heard that up in Buffalo, they do use the tunnels when there's like 6 feet of snow and it's really cold out. I've even heard that they sell coffee down there, but I don't believe that.
They do.
What I can tell you though too is there are tunnels beneath Stoneford campus. So we went all the way to the other side of campus, where in the site building was a broken door that we could enter in. So we went in with our flashlights, gung-ho, and then realized we needed more powerful flashlights, compasses, paper, and pencils to make a map. They were a little intricate. So the next few weeks, we are going and mapping the tunnels underneath Stony Brook. And we found new entrances into other dorm buildings where there was these abandoned bars from when the campus was wet. There were libraries that we could come up from. We got into the bookstore. We even got into campus security. All tons of fun. But nothing could stop us from our goal. That's right. So, this one day, we're going down, and we're going down a particularly long hallway. Now, the tunnels were always kind of dark, and they were hidden into lights, but this particular long tunnel seemed darker. So, we're going down this hallway, and that's when we come up to a car. A burnt-out car. Now, Chris goes and runs right onto it and starts playing on it like a jungle gym in a playground. And me and Rob are just like looking at this. And he goes to me and he's like, "How did a car get down here? I'm like, forget about a car. How did a burnt out car get down here? I mean, nobody could bring it down in that condition. And I'm hoping nobody would burn a car in a tunnel." Anyway, Chris was very unimpressed with our musings. He got bored with the car. He's like, "Come on, well, let's go. This is it. We're on our way." So we continue. We're walking, it gets a little darker, and then we see scroll on the wall. "Beware of the Morlocks." Chill goes down my spine. Now, I know, this must have been some overzealous, like, sci-fi geek came down here in the middle of the night to scroll on the walls. But still, it's kind of freaky. "Chris, what are the Morlocks?" So I started to explain, you know, about H.G. Wells and the time machine and the underground cable.
"You gotta tell him Silent Brain is people!"
No. Wrong movie. So we continue on our way. Now we're pretty sure that we are right in line. We're under the Tom Sy Bioscience building. And we turn the corner and we see the pit. Now, on our side of the pit, there's all this like garbage and detritus. It's this huge wooden barrel, you know, that they put telephone cable around and stuff like that, and there's garbage everywhere. And then 50 feet across, there's this pristine gray tunnel illuminated by a red light and a spiral staircase going up. And then there was the pit. Now, the pit wasn't like a break in the concrete from, you know, bad construction and so forth. It wasn't an unfinished part of the tunnel. It was a constructed pit that spanned the entire length of the tunnel and went across for about 50 feet. And out of the pit were these huge poles, like telephone poles, that stuck out like toothpicks in a glass jar. Now, here's the thing. First of all, what's the pit doing there, right? Second thing, why are these wood poles sticking up out of the pit? And third of all, how deep is the pit? So we're looking down, and we take our flashlights. It doesn't illuminate the bottom. So, natural thing to do. Pick up a rock, throw it down. Nothing. No thud, zero. So we figured we just didn't hear it, right? We take it down, so then another one. Same thing. Now we're a little freaked out. Chris starts to theorize that at the bottom of the pit, there must be sand, and this is why we didn't hear the thud, and this is why the poles can be sticking out by the way that they're sticking out, making like this path to going across. Now, hey, me and Rob were not buying this and stuff, but before we know it, he is going across the poles like stepping stones. So, well, to our surprise, he gets across. Fine. So, me and Rob like start our way over the pit, one by one and so forth, until we get to the other side. Now we're looking around and we're kind of checking out the place, just seeing where it is, and we're looking at the staircase. So we're all looking at each other, and I'm like, all right, let's go. So I start going up the stairs, twisting, turning, step by step by step. Now on top of the stairs, there's a huge steel gray door with one of those giant push bars. Look back at Chris and Rob. They look at me and go, all right, this is it, the monkey lab. And I push in. We ran down the stairs, across the pit like gazelles, down through the dark hallway, all the way through the thing until we finally got out of the psych lab panting and happy that we're still alive. So the next day, we did find out that the fire department did respond to an emergency call in the biosciences building. And there was talk about going back, but I was already paranoid that they had my fingerprints, and they were gonna knock on my door the next day. And I knew for a fact that the second time we went there would definitely be barred or trapped or something. Anyway, we go back to our computer science pursuits. Now, a couple of days go by, and we're just doing our normal routine, going through, and going after the loading docks, playing with the silver cabinets and so on. And we noticed that the lab door is open. We can't even believe our eyes all this time and so forth. A clear shot to our goal. And Chris is about to lead the charge. And that's when it dawns on me. I recognize these silver cabins. I've seen them in all these like movies and TV shows, crime dramas. They're the same silver cabinets that you would see in a morgue. And Chris goes, no way! They can't be morgue cabinets. I mean, no body could fit in there. It's too short. Not too short for a monkey, I said. I looked back at the silver cabinets and some kind of transferred our whole image of what we were doing. I looked back at the door. An assistant who had just gotten some Mountain Dew walked through and closed the doors after him. Now, I think about those times and our adventures as kind of a little spark about, you know, how excited we were and all the different things that we did and the adventures we had. And I guess I have to sort of smile and laugh at the naivete of three young boys that were rushing to the inevitable conclusion that waits for us all.